Hey everybody, welcome to Bioenergetic Basics number 10. And today we're going to talk about five people that inspired Ray Peet. The true method of knowledge is experiment. William Blake said that. In memory of Ray Peet, raypeet.com. And this episode is brought to you by my course. It's on Patreon and Gumroad. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. This episode is also brought to you by Progesti from Kinogen. We'll talk about that a little bit more later as well. For today's episode, we're going to talk about Pyotr Kropotkin. We're going to talk about Vladimir Vernadsky. We're going to talk about Albert St. Georgi. We're going to talk about Hans Selye and Abraham Maslow. And this was difficult because I could have chose a lot of different people. For example, William F. Koch or Bucky Fuller or J.C. Bowes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, William Blake. One of the reasons I didn't choose Blake is I'm not qualified to talk about him. And the other thing is the philosophy of Ray Peet, a video on the internet, I think is by Hermetics Podcast, is so phenomenal that I wouldn't even want to broach the subject after that dude tackled it. So it's so good. And I'll leave a link for it below. But let's get right into Pyotr Kropotkin. So let's talk about his basic ideas. Mutual aid rather than competition is a driving force of evolution. Reciprocal assistance, sharing resources, working together, not charity. For Ray, mutual aid was the basic reflex of life, i.e. not a moral philosophy, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So let's start with some quotes from Kropotkin and let's segue into what Ray thought about the whole thing. So this is from Mutual Aid. He says, in all animal societies, solidarity is a natural law of far greater importance than the struggle for existence, the virtue of which is sung by the ruling classes in every strain that may best serve to stultify us. Kropotkin also says, each individual is a cosmos of organs. Each organ is a cosmos of cells. And in this complex world, the well-being of the whole depends entirely on the sum of the well-being enjoyed by each of the least microscopic particles of organized matter. So in the Origins of Authoritarianism podcast I did with Ray in 2016, he said, Tolstoy and Kropotkin are my oldest political influences. And in 2021, Ray said, as the earlier biological work of Pyotr Kropotkin worked out, and some of his followers in the later 20th century showed, that cooperation all across evolution spectrum, cooperation within species and even across a species is the basic property of life. Like bacteria will give their life-saving genetic material, even the strange unrelated bacteria. And these last two get into what Ray added, I think, to Kropotkin's idea, blending his political philosophy with Ray's physiological ideas of humanity and what it meant to be human. So this is from an episode from Politics and Science from John Burkhausen in 2015. And John says, is empathy evolutionarily advantageous? And Ray says, I see empathy as the universal principle of substance, the absolute opposite of the essentialist view of reality. And essentialist is the idea that things don't ever change. If you break the world up into like Leibnizian monads, the essentialists say that the monads are closed. The existence of empathy implies that each unit of existence is open and interacting with its environment. So I see empathy as expressible in physical terms such as resonance. In the case of empathizing with a person or animal, you tune your nervous system so that it is in effect resonating with the conditions of the other's nervous system. But I see it as something that's explaining why the amino acids take on non-random arrangement in Fox's molecules, why certain structures are stable that happen to look like small bacteria. Resonance is a stabilizer on the atomic level, the chemical cellular level, and so on, as well as organismic level resonance of the nervous system. So let's talk about one more Ray quote, and then we'll talk about it a bit. So he also said, empathy is an animal trait that Utomsky saw involved as a central process in the nervous system, the formation of dominance, a way of understanding involving our whole being. A baby understands the meaning of a smile by smiling. Animals understand gestures by how they feel when imagined or imitated. The resonant interactions involve spontaneous mutual aid on the local level of families and neighbors, and with some luck on the larger social and ecological levels. So I think in my small brain, trying to understand all of this stuff, resonance is coherence within cells and tissues and organs, and that reciprocates to other organisms. And then mutual aid. So I think if somebody brought up Kropotkin's idea of mutual aid, somebody might say, I don't abide by that. I'm more of an individualist or something like that. Like they're choosing the political philosophy that they want to enact. But I think Ray is saying that mutual aid is part of our physiology. Like what he said, the basic reflex of substance. And to deny that is to deny basic aspects of being human. We can blend this in a little bit later with the self-actualized person that Maslow talks about. And that key concept of self-actualization was that you help others and that fulfills you. We'll tie it all together, hopefully at the end here. Okay, so let's talk about Vladimir Vernadsky. And this was a huge influence on Ray. And he wrote a book called The Biosphere. And the biosphere encompasses all living organisms, the geological force, interactions with the lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere. The biosphere collects solar energy and redistributes it, generating higher levels of organisms with increasing available energy. And it's not an accident. So let's get into some of Vladimir Vernadsky's quotes, then we'll segue into what Ray said about him. Ancient religious institutions considered terrestrial creatures, especially man, to be children of the sun, were far nearer the truth than is thought by those who see earthly beings simply as ephemeral supernatural creatures arising from blind and accidental interplay of matter and forces. Creatures on Earth are the fruit of extended, complex processes and are the essential part of a harmonious cosmic mechanism in which it is known that fixed laws apply and chance does not exist. So here's another quote from Vernadsky from the Biosphere. He says, "The man and mankind are first of all and most closely linked with living matter populating our planet. By no real physical process can they be separated from it. Such separation is possible in thought alone." And then he also says, "All living matter can be regarded as a single entity in the mechanism of the biosphere." So Ray says in 2020 on the Gender of Energy with Georgie was the first one, I think. He said, "I see Kropotkin blending in with Vernadsky. Vernadsky saying that the flow of energy from the sun into the earth is trying. The substance responding to that flow of energy is creating a living structure system that is assimilating and accumulating the interactions on different levels of the ecosystem, permitting the optimizing the metabolism of the big animal developing a big brain and doing the things that are appropriate, like animals tearing through the jungle, are improving the fertility of the system, not damaging it." Back in 1994, he said, "Many people prefer to see the idea of consciousness having a meaningful and central place in evolution as exclusively a religious idea. However, from Vernadsky's perspective, it can be derived from seeing life in the physical and chemical terms." So from what I understand about Vernadsky, you have the biosphere and you have the sun, and the biosphere is absorbing solar energy from the sun. And based on Ray's hypothesis, energy and structure are interdependent at every level. When you have an unlimited source of energy, that's naturally going to complexify and organize the system. And in our case, unlimited energy is resulting in higher metabolism organisms to capture that energy and then give back to the biosphere. So in a reciprocating cosmic process. Okay, so let's talk about Albert St. Georgi and Albert St. Georgi's key ideas. The degree and development of the living state is the function of the electronic desaturation, few free electrons or more electron acceptors than donors. Big difference between energy from glycolysis and oxidative metabolism. In the living state, ATP is dominant even at rest, keeping tissue soft and pliable. So here are some great quotes from Albert St. Georgi. He says, "A living cell requires energy not only for all of its functions, but also to maintain its structure." And then also, "Treating humans without the concept of energy is treating dead matter." So here's another quote from 1972, The Living State by Albert St. Georgi. He says, "The more life does, the more life it is. The more negative entropy is liberated, the more can be retained of it. Life supports life. Function builds structure, and structure produces function. Once the function ceases, the structure collapses. It maintains itself by working. A good working order is thus the most stable state." Here's another quote by Albert St. Georgi talking about oxygen deprivation and disordering the cell. "If oxygen is withheld from tissues of a higher organism for a longer period, death follows. If, however, oxygen is withheld but periodically and restored before death ensues, then we can expect not only the oxidative system will become disorganized, but also that there will be degeneration of all those higher functions and regulations which demand structure and perturbed electromagnetic field for their function and energization. The cell will thus revert to a more primitive way of life with its lower level organization, which is not dependent on ordered structures, which also lacks the subtle regulations and has thus, as in yeast, unlimited proliferation as one of its characteristics and can depend for its energy supply only on fermentation." So here's the last one from Albert St. Georgi. He says, "The role of ATP is not limited to the contraction cycle. It dominates the physical state of muscle even in rest, keeping it soft and pliable. I have shown that rigor mortis is but a lack of ATP." So this gets into Gilbert Ling territory, where he said that ATP was not broken down into ADP to generate energy, and that it was actually more useful staying in ATP as a cardinal adsorbent. So here we see Ray's affinity for Albert St. Georgi. In 1989, he has a newsletter called St. Georgi's Energy. And here in 2020, I think this was my question to him. I said, "Do you feel like you're following in a tradition of people like St. Georgi, Otto Warburg, and Koch and others?" And Ray said, "Yeah, and even earlier, J.C. Bose was one of my first inspirations." And in 2015, Ray said that, "I think Albert St. Georgi actually was the one that motivated people to start going in the direction of electronic biology and a coherent view of the cell." Ray says, "A point made by Otto Warburg and Albert St. Georgi and others is that there is an important difference between energy provided by glycolysis and that provided by mitochondrial respiration. They felt that glycolysis was a primitive form of energy production and supported only primitive function and cell division, while the more efficient respiration supported cell differentiation and complex functioning." Okay, so let's get into Hans Selye, the pioneer of the stress response. "Exposure to different stressors caused the same general adaptive response. Stress is synonymous with life and cannot be avoided. Bolstering our response to stress by increasing our adaptive energy should be the goal for good health." So let's quickly run through Selye's version of stress, because stress is something that's chronically misunderstood. And he says, "A great deal of confusion has arisen in lay and even scientific literature because the term stress means different things to different people. Stress is part of our daily human experience, but it is associated with a great variety of essentially dissimilar problems, such as surgical trauma, burns, emotional arousal, mental or physical effort, fatigue, pain, fear, the need for concentration, the humiliation of frustration, the loss of blood, intoxication with drugs, or even with the kind of unexpected success stress that requires an individual to reformulate his lifestyle. Medical research has shown that while all of these subjects face quite different problems, they respond with the stereotype pattern of biochemical, functional, and structural changes, essentially involved in coping with any type of increased demand upon vital activity, particularly adaptation to new situations. All endogenous or exogenous agents that make such demands are called stressors. Distinguishing between their widely differing specific effects and the common biologic response that they elicit is the key to proper understanding of biologic stress. And Hans Selye did tie in the whole energy concept. It was just not as thought out as Ray and Albert St. George, I think. So here we go. He says, in fact, we shall see that biologic stress is closely linked to, though not identical with, energy utilization. Selye dabbled with philosophy, but as we'll find out here, Selye is actually the only person that I put in this list that Ray had a problem with. And I think on a scientific level, he was extremely fruitful with the catatoxic hormones and energy and stress. His skeleton of what he's talking about is all there. But I think for whatever reason, Selye didn't understand the philosophical angle of a lot of this, but he was kind of a plain milquetoast conservative. He has some good stuff in Stress Without Distress. He says, my own code is based on the view that to achieve proper mind and fulfillment through self-expression, most men need a commitment to work in the service of some cause they can respect. So meaningful work. Bucky Fuller says that. Maslow says that. Ray says that. Wilhelm Reich says that. seems pretty important. And then also, I agree with this. Selye says, stress and health and disease is medically, sociologically, and philosophically the most meaningful subject for humanity that I can think of. And so if we had an environment that was organized around not causing biological stress, I mean, what would that look like? You go into the grocery store and you have red lights everywhere and you have negative ions while you're shopping for food and the food is not toxic. The people around you are happy. I mean, that would be absolutely incredible. And I know a lot of people, when they think about politics or the way things could be, they're reactionary. They want to go back to the past. But something I always loved about Ray is I think he was always thinking about how things could be in the future. Here's the email that was critical of Hans Selye. So he says, Selye knew vastly more than the noble class of biologists, but he was essentially a conservative, telling us how to get along in the sick society, secreting steroids to tolerate the horrors, smoking a cigarette to distract our attention. His adaptation missed the whole picture that Hans Dreisch, Jacques Loeb, and Paul Kammerer had been working on, adaptation as purposeful growth. In the first philosophy course I took, Ramon Giro, talking about Plato and Aristotle, made me realize that a big thing it was for Aristotle to focus on becoming rather than being. The stuff we inherit moment by moment from our past is an occasion for our choices. So it's all possibility rather than causality. And finally, we get to our last influence on Ray Pete, Abraham Maslow. He emphasized self-actualization, which is becoming all you can become, personal growth and peak experiences as essential components of health. He believed that people had an innate drive towards self-improvement. He considered the whole person, addressing not just symptoms, but also the individual's potential for growth and self-realization. So let's get to some memorable quotes from some of his books and then see what Ray has to say about him. In Toward a Psychology of Being, Maslow said, sick people are made by a sick culture. Healthy people are made possible by a healthy culture. But it is just as true that sick individuals make their culture more sick and that healthy individuals make their culture more healthy. He also said, it is too often not realized that culture itself is an adaptive tool, one of whose main functions is to make the physiological emergencies come less and less often. This is what the culture should be doing. And instead of that, they're weaponizing every possible thing you can think of and gaslighting you in every way, shape, or form. They hate you. They want to kill you. And that's hilarious. Not hilarious. It's sad and terrible given these thinkers of thinking of how life could be improved and people could flourish and do what they wanted to do. This has been one of the most useful quotes in the last 15 years of my life. And he said, not allowing people to go through their pain and protecting them from it may turn out to be a kind of overprotection, which in turn implies a certain lack of respect for the integrity and the intrinsic nature and future development of the individual. So as I had this explained to me many, many years ago, when somebody says, oh my God, my cat died, the worst approach is saying things will get better and you shouldn't worry about it. But that happened to me very frequently in my life. And I think it was bad for my development. And I think a better approach is if somebody doesn't feel well or feels terrible or whatever, you can try to meet them where they are and actually say how terrible it is. So if somebody's cat dies, same example, you say it must feel like the worst feeling you could possibly feel, not trying to negate their feelings and just letting them stew and how bad it is. And I think that's actually better than trying to tell a person not to feel a certain way. Here's another quote that was another thing that really changed the way I think about things. What is necessary to change a person is to change his awareness of himself. So for example, if you're trying to talk to somebody about hypothyroidism, you could try to explain the thyroid and stress, or you could ask them, are your hands and feet ever cold? Relating those to hypothyroidism would be a lot more more efficient than I think trying to explain some grand theory. I'm not saying the theory is not important or anything, but trying to change the person's own awareness of themselves, I think is a lot of the time more effective than trying to force some odd theory that they're not familiar with. So speaking of another quote that I think is extremely valuable, this one was in Toward a Psychology of Being in 1961. And he says, "The only happy people I know are the ones who are working well at something they consider important." And I know this is easier said than done, but Ray says the basic thing you should demand from your work is meaning to your life. And that's hard in this environment to actually do what you want and be paid for that and be able to make a living out of it. So here is Ray in 2015, and he's talking to John Barkhausen again. And John says, "Who is Maslow, Ray?" And Ray says, "Abraham Maslow, the Brandeis psychologist, along with Carl Rogers. He was the great step forward in psychology beyond Freudianism and behaviorism to humanistic psychology." And here's my question to him from 2018. And I said, "I always liked when I would see something from Maslow or see something from Rogers, and it would make me understand your work a little bit better." And Ray said, "I had been reading Freud and the Freudians for 6 months when I found Maslow's book. It was a tremendous experience, just the way he spoke." And that's all. We've got through it. This took me a really long time to do. I should talk about my course here, Bioenergetic Basics. I'm getting really positive feedback. Thank you guys so much. This course I made is not for somebody who's new to Ray Pete and wants to learn about all the ideas. This is more for application. So I have been talking to people for a long time, and there are certain things that pop up over and over and over again. And so I kind of took a mental list of all those things, and then I packed it into a course. I recorded about a 2.5 hour course, and then I edited it down to a very dense hour and 10 minutes. It talks about thyroid hormone supplementation. It talks about dietary intervention, talks about digestion issues, approaching those, talks about anti-stress home strategies. It talks about interpreting lab work. It talks about supplements. And so again, all the most common questions I've ever received all in one place on Gumroad or Patreon. I do one-to-one coaching on Patreon, and you could link up for a call if you wanted to that way as well. And also, this show is brought to you by Kenogen's ProGest-D. In 2018, Ray said, "I think it's the only good progesterone product." You can email Catherine at Kenogen@gmail.com, and she will send you a requisition form. You can pay it via PayPal, and then she'll send out the ProGest-D. She's extremely efficient at shipping it all over the world. And so I'd ask her if your specific area could obtain it. But most of the time, I think it's yes, it is true. And that's all. Thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it. I have an amazing audience, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Peace out.